Well, thanks for coming, everyone. So I should say that a little bit about the background of this paper. So this is kind of outcome of some research that I was doing for the past few years, that ESRC funded project, which I had, which finished last year, which explores, well, its central focus was exploring the relationship between power sharing and power sharing institutions and the politics of the census here in Northern Ireland, in Bosnia, in Lebanon, and also in Kenya. While I was kind of conducting that research, I kept encountering references to the 1971 and 1981 census boycotts here, but there didn't seem to be much to be much literature exploring why those boycotts happened. And they get mentioned, as I'll say in a minute, they get mentioned kind of in passing in accounts of conflict and accounts of changing demography of Northern Ireland. But I couldn't really get to the bottom of like what the story was behind the boycotts. So some point in 2018, I made the decision to go to PRONI, the Public Record Office, and start to have a look at some of the files there. And then subsequently the newspaper archive and Lindenhall Library, etc., etc. And so 18 months later, with thousands of images of archive files on my computer, here I am with the first attempt to kind of present some of this material. And I should say that, as Peter has said, I'm a political scientist, not a historian, much less a historian of the Troubles. What could go wrong? And this is the first time I've ever done archival research. So I'm very open to suggestions that I'm doing the whole thing wrong, or you know, change approach, look at something different. And yeah, I should also say I'm going to have to read out quite large sections of the paper, because there is quite a lot of detail which I can't memorize in the way that I would normally do when giving a presentation. Okay, so there's actually been very little sort of, although the census is of continuing political interest here, and particularly because what it tells us about the changing religious demography of Northern Ireland, actually relatively little has been written about the history of the census taking process itself. And so this is a kind of attempt to kind of start to engage with writing some of that history, I suppose. By looking at these two boycotts that happened of the census in 1971 and 1981. And so just, I said that mentions of these boycotts do crop up in the literature. So just to kind of mention what the literature says so far. So the 1981 boycott has probably received the widest attention, largely because it took place against the backdrop of the Republican hunger strike of 1981. And it's usually explained, when it is mentioned in the literature, by reference to concerns about privacy in the context of heightened suspicion of the state during the Troubles. So Robert White, in his oral history of the Republican movement, for example, argues that the provisionals were boycotting the census, claiming it was being used to gather intelligence. Similarly, Lillian Clark and Catherine Johnson write that Martin McGuinness and the rest of the Republican leadership had ordered a boycott campaign against the census, which they regarded as an intelligence trawl on the part of the British government. And this also got a bit of attention last year when Lyra McKee was murdered, because some comparisons were made between her murder and the murder of a census enumerator in 1981, which I'll come to. And that coverage tended to, yeah, reflecting back on that 81 murder, tended to talk about it in the context of a campaign against the census, which was motivated by concerns that it was being used to gather intelligence. Now, in relation to the earlier 71 boycott, a demographer, McCourt, notes specific objections to the religion question, sort of a belief that the data were being used by the government for political purposes. But he also notes that a group of Catholic priests refused to complete their census forms entirely, not out of protest against the census itself, but as against what they saw as a partial administration of justice. And Maggie Scull, who I believe was talking as part of this seminar series last term, has written a little bit about this in her recent history of the Catholic Church and the Troubles. And she talks about it as the priest boycott, specifically as being in a long tradition of census boycotting by other non-violent movements. And she argues they were contesting the treatment of Catholics as non-citizens whose basic civil rights had been infringed. So that sort of sets up a range of possible kind of explanations. And I think just as a bit of a framing device, it's helpful to think about if one were to boycott a census, there are a number of reasons one might do that. So on the one hand, we might be concerned about something very specific to the census, such as what the data was going to be used for, whether it was being used for intelligence purposes or in deeply divided societies, as is often the case, out of some objection to an inclusion of a question or the non-inclusion of a question or a category around ethnicity or religion or language, etc. But on the other hand, one might boycott the census, not through any particular concern for the census itself, but as a sort of, because the census is kind of symbolic of the power of the state, and it's one of those few state exercises which everyone has to participate in. So it's quite powerful to boycott the census. And probably the most famous example of this second type of boycott is the suffragettes' boycott of the 1911 UK census under the slogan of no votes, no census, kind of echoed here. Actually, was it Emily Davison, the suffragette, famously hid in a broom cupboard in the House of Parliament to avoid being counted in the 1911 census at protest of the fact that women didn't have the vote. So those kind of two categories I want you to bear in mind. Okay, so then getting to the 1971 and 1981 boycotts then. So I think if you're a statistician and you're organising a census, then 1971 in Northern Ireland is not really your kind of ideal situation that you want to be conducting a census in. As a note, confidential note circulated by the Ministry of Finance noted in March 1971, a month before enumeration was due to take place. So this note stressed that it was desirable for the census to go ahead, but noted that it will shortly be necessary to decide whether the state of the country permits a census to be taken in Northern Ireland on 25th of April. Now, for the first time in 1971, the census would rely entirely on civilian enumerators rather than members of the RUC, as previously been the case. And the Cabinet had been made aware of this in October 1967, and had been told that the Inspector General would be most reluctant, in view of the other burdens falling upon the RUC, to disrupt ordinary police work by agreeing to the use of police enumerators. So the Minister of Home Affairs, William Craig, was also said to be opposed to the use of the police except as a last resort. And the March 71 note subsequently outlined how civilian enumerators had been allocated wherever possible to work in areas adjacent to their own. This arrangement, it was argued, avoided the potential for suspicion and resentment that might arise if enumerators were collecting information about their immediate neighbours. But it will still have the general effect of allowing enumerators to work amongst their co-religionists. So while noting that some might perceive the census to be a police trick to pinpoint the whereabouts of certain individuals, the Ministry of Finance also acknowledged the potential for broader political problems. So the note stated, long quote here, "If trouble is met, it is likely to be in very few areas. To call off the whole operation would appear to be politically damaging for the government, in that it would give the impression that the province generally was not amenable to law and order, and in particular would be regarded as practical proof of no-go areas." And officials were particularly concerned about encountering difficulties in the Ardoyne area of Belfast, which are 4th of March note had described as probably a write-off. Nonetheless, it was feared that cancellation would be bad propaganda for Northern Ireland, signalling that the census could not be safely conducted anywhere, and that it was therefore worth going ahead even if returns couldn't be guaranteed from Ardoyne. So advice from the Registrar General set out several recommendations for reducing non-compliance, and these included that publicity should stress the value of census data for planning new houses and hospitals in overcrowded areas, and also stressing that the information gathered would not be shared with other government departments or the police. And officials had sought the agreement of some Catholic priests to have their photographs taken, receiving their census forms early in the enumeration process for use in the media. And an image of Dr. William Philbin, the Bishop of Down and Connor, posing with a census form next to an enumerator was accompanied a Belfast Telegraph article about the confidentiality of census data in April, for example. Here we see the image. So the RG had also sought advice from the police, who suggested that we should not meet united opposition in any area, and even in areas such as Ardoyne, Ballymurphy and New Lodge Road, only a minority of the householders should prove very difficult. He had also sought legal advice on whether certain areas, troublesome areas as they were referred to, could be excluded from the enumeration. But actually, the first signs that the census would be subject to boycott had more to do with developments in Britain than with the security situation in Northern Ireland. So, concerned about the introduction of computer technology and its implications for privacy, a number of members of the Liberal Party, including its leader, then leader Jeremy Thorpe, had signalled their intention to refuse to answer some of the questions. And members of the Young Liberals went on to burn their census forms in Trafalgar Square. As well as being covered in the national press, this protest attracted attention in Northern Ireland, and it featured on the front page of the Belfast Telegraph on the 13th of April, for instance. And very quickly, these concerns started to take on a specific Northern Ireland dimension. So on the 19th of April, an Irish News Leader column noted, "Strong views, as we know, are being expressed in England against the amount of information being demanded by the 71 census forms." And the paper went on to observe, "Protestations about the sanctity of the information garnered by the census are bound to be accepted with a certain reserve, and even more so in the six counties, where, with one party rule by a government dominated by the nefarious influence of the Orange Order, surveillance, whether through government or police agencies, of individual affairs has always given rise to suspicion." And this editorial followed statements by the Northern Executive of Republican Clubs and by both the official and provisional wings of the IRA, that while they would encourage people to boycott the census in protest at the Special Powers Act in particular. So the official IRA statement argued that under the cover of taking a census, the government will have computerised access to information on all citizens of these six counties. And while some Republicans, as that demonstrates, were calling for a boycott, the Northern Ireland Civil Rights Association was advocating for a slightly different response. So the Civil Rights Association, responding to these concerns about privacy, reminded people that the religion question was optional and called on people not to answer it. Now, the official response to these kind of concerns was basically to issue reassurances about the privacy of personal census data and emphasise it was needed for planning purposes and that this was in the interests of the Catholic population. So the Registrar General, Jim Malley, for example, attempted to explain that the information we collect is strictly confidential. No information is given to anyone, and that includes the security forces and the police. Specific assurances were given that the Special Powers Act would not be used to gain access to personal data from the census. And Malley subsequently went as far to state that if there's the least suggestion that the Special Powers Act will be used to extract information, then I will resign immediately. He also stressed that census data was essential for studying the social and economic problems and deciding what can be done about them. Only questions to which answers are really necessary are being asked, he said. A government press release stated that the Act had never been used to require disclosure of information provided on census forms, and that even if legally possible, the government would not use the Act in this way. The Community Relations Minister, David Bleakley, also attempted to persuade members of the Catholic community that cooperation with the census was in their interests, by highlighting its use in social and economic planning, including to overcome problems of unemployment and overcrowding. And the kind of establishment unionist newspapers very much echoed this position. So the Belfast Telegraph, in a front page viewpoint, reported that talk of use of the Special Powers Act to gain access to the data was a scare story, and that even if it were a legal possibility, the government has made it absolutely clear that it would not use the act for this purpose. What more can it do? Furthermore, the newspaper argued that while people were naturally fearful of disclosing such information, and this is a quote, when people like this on the Republican side of the fence try to force others to boycott the census, it becomes a serious concern. The value of the census is impaired, and plans based on population returns may be ill-founded. Nowhere is this information more needed than in the so-called riot areas, which are without exception marked by unfit and overcrowded accommodation. If Republicans are so concerned about living conditions as they say they are, they should be helping, not hindering, an accurate survey of the most deprived areas. So interestingly, a number of academics also responded to the boycott calls in a similar manner. So Queen's University geographers Fred Bowle and Paul Compton, who some of you may know, wrote to the Irish News, for example, stating that we are very disturbed to read in your paper of the apparent opposition which is developing to the population census and to which you lent some editorial support. Bowle and Compton went on to argue, we are particularly surprised at the source of the apparent opposition to the census, as it is the least privileged members of both communities who have the most to gain in a practical sense from the census, not only through the better provision of houses and schools, but also the dissemination of information about which groups in the north of Ireland have the poorest housing, highest unemployment and most unwholesome jobs. Similarly, Terence O'Brien of the then New University at Coleraine wrote to appeal to those with Republican sympathies who are having reservations about this census to fill in the returns conscientiously, including religious affiliations, if any. He argued that, quote, in the ghetto slums, in the dole queues, in the prisons, in the low-skilled, low-satisfaction jobs, there is a story to be told, which must be told. So assurances about the privacy of the census data did little to change the attitude of Republican groups, however. So on 22nd of April, Sinn Féin stated that it was not calling for a boycott due to the hardship people might face if they were fined, but it suggested that enumerators should be impeded in the collection of forms. And they argued, by this action, we shall be demonstrating our contempt for the Special Powers Act. One Belfast Republican Club branch, meanwhile, issued a statement claiming that we are horse telling them about conditions here, and the statement called for action rather than further data collection. So even Terence O'Brien, the academic who'd argued in favour of people completing the census, conceded that very little had been done based on the 1961 census data, and that census data hadn't been published on social conditions broken down by religious affiliation. But in order to kind of fully understand opposition to the census, I think it's useful to consider whether the concerns were motivated solely by concerns about privacy or by wider debates. And I think this question was answered quite conclusively by events of the weekend of the 24th and 25th of April, when thousands of census forms were reported to have been publicly burned across Belfast. After a census burning protest at Andersonstown, the Wolfetone Republican Club stated that the protest was, quote, against the repressive legislation, the partial manner in which the courts have been operating, and the lack of amenities in working class areas, despite the fact that there have been innumerable surveys in the past. Meanwhile, and this is where we get to the priests, 27 Catholic priests from the Diocese of Down and Connor had announced their refusal to complete their census forms in protest at what was described as the partial administration of law in Northern Ireland. The Irish News reported that advising others to complete their census forms, so they weren't calling on others to boycott, the Down and Connor priests said that their protest was not against the census itself. Rather, they were anxious to concentrate their efforts on the issue of injustices and of law, and felt that their action in refusing to sign census forms was an immediate way of highlighting these injustices. And the immediate trigger for their boycott was the arrest and imprisonment of a young man for shouting up the IRA on 13th of April, when on the same day others had shouted up the UVF and to hell with the Pope without consequence, despite the presence of the army and the police. And the priests argued that this enforcement and non-enforcement of law indicates a reality in our community, and their statement advised that, I quote, "We believe that minorities in our community, whether they be political or religious, are not accorded a quality of citizenship. We believe that there is evidence of inequality before the law from current practices of its enforcement agencies, the police and the judiciary. We believe that prosecution, refusals of bail, detention by repeated remands in custody and lengthy prison sentences are selective. On reflection, we have decided we have a serious moral obligation to protest against the perversion of justice." So even though the priests had advised other citizens to complete their census forms, their protest was in fact joined by others. So, for example, it was later reported that 39 Catholic teachers were joining the protest, and one group of the teachers stated that it becomes increasingly difficult to instill in our pupils concepts of good citizenship and respect for authority when it is obvious that all are not equal before the law. Now, by this point, the 27 priests had been joined by 18 fellow clergy from Tyrone and by the Nationalist Party MP for Mourne, James O'Reilly, who announced that he wouldn't be returning his census form. Another person who refused to complete the census form was Queen's University philosophy lecturer James Daly, who subsequently wrote that this was in protest at selective prosecutions, including for those shouting up the IRA. And the burning of census forms had also spread beyond Belfast. So in Armagh, for example, more than 50 forms were reported to have been burned in protest at the murder of a local man, John Gallagher, shot during a riot in 1969, and what protesters argued were the continued unionist misrule and the inaction of the authorities over Gallagher's death. I think Gallagher was actually considered by some sources to be the first death of the Troubles. Then I have a very brief paragraph about, I found a couple of newspaper reports saying there was a bomb attack on the census office on Fermanagh House in May, but actually I can find very little information, and it's contradictory about whether census forms were burned in that bomb attack or actually whether they survived. As I say, I can find very little on that. So while it was members of the nationalist community who initiated the boycotts, this actually provoked some unionists to threaten similarly to refuse to participate. So in the Northern Ireland House of Commons on 27th of April, Ian Paisley inquired of the Minister of Finance, Herbert Kirk, whether in view of the public burning of many census forms, the declaration by over 30 Roman Catholic priests that they will boycott the census, and the declaration of leniency by the Registrar General, it is his intention to enforce the law or overlook the matter. So inverting the arguments of the priests and others who had boycotted the census, Paisley asked whether, and I quote, "at long last the people are going to have a law applied to all sections of the community, as in the past the Protestant section of the community have felt in the manner of the law that they have been very rudely treated, very rashly and very harshly treated." Attempting to do an impression there. At this point, James O'Reilly, Nationalist Party MP, pointed out that Paisley had threatened not to return his census form if the nationalist boycotters were not prosecuted. Kirk responded, somewhat annoyedly, I think, to questions about prosecutions by stating that they were a matter for law enforcement officers, and finished by saying, "could I give a bit of ordinary Ulster advice to the priests, to O'Reilly and to Paisley and any other person? The census is looking for ordinary and dull statistical information and for trends. The advice I would give them is to have a titter of wit." So despite this ministerial advice, Paisley's rhetoric about the supposed selective application of the law appears to have influenced at least some members of the public to boycott the census. So in late 71, a man and a woman who had refused to complete their census forms appeared in court in Bangor, with the woman explaining that, quote, She wished to protest that Roman Catholics had not been discriminated upon, but rather the Protestant community and especially the Free Presbyterians. She had reportedly told the enumerator that she would not return her form until the 30 priests who had refused to sign theirs had been prosecuted. Both defendants eventually had their summonses withdrawn when they handed in their census form, satisfied that the priests had now been summoned. But even after Paisley's intervention, away from the public eye, there was considerable concern about officials, amongst officials, about the impact that prosecuting the priests might have. So shortly after being appointed in September 71, G.B. New, who I think was the only Catholic ever to serve in the Unionist, as a minister in the Unionist Stormont regime, wrote to Ken Bloomfield, who was then Deputy Secretary to the Cabinet, to alert him to the fact that several priests have spoken to me about the importance of not allowing those fined for not filling their census forms to become martyrs. New went on to argue that if they will not pay fines and seek to go to jail, we must take some sort of steps to have the fines paid and so deny them the civil disobedience movement the pleasure and the propaganda value of priests imprisoned. And he sought to forestall action against the priest for pending further consideration. So fines of £7 had been imposed on 8 of the priests by Belfast Magistrate Court. And the priests had responded to that by saying that they wouldn't pay the fines and they would instead contribute the equivalent amount to the Association for Legal Justice. New subsequently wrote to priests and a prominent businessman, Frank Benner, outlining the fact that some other members of the clergy had written to him offering to anonymously pay the fines of the boycotting priests so that they would be denied publicity value of being imprisoned. And he'd managed to have the issuance of warrants held up until he could see if enough money could be collected to cover all of the priests' fines. New stated in the letters to Benner, and actually wrote to some other people as well, that he himself was willing to cover the costs of 2 or 3 of the fines, and that 2 Presbyterian ministers had also offered to cover 1 each. The letters asked the recipients to consider whether they might be able to contribute or influence others to do so. And New noted that it would be best for the money to be paid in cash so that the payees could not be traced. Now, by January 1972, so this is dragging on quite a lot by this point, News plan to raise the funds seemed to have run into some difficulties. So writing to the Reverend Robert Murphy, he noted that he'd talked to the boss man, I think that he means Philbin here, that while he deplores their action, he sees it as the actions of men who are free to so act if they wish. New reported that he felt that the bishop is annoyed about the whole business, but for some strange reason he does not want to be involved. Yet he would be glad if I do something. New wrote that, "I'm in a swither. I assured the folks here that the fines will be paid, and so warrants have been held up. What am I to do now?" In late January, New wrote again to Benner, who had previously offered to contribute £20, to explain that another man who had offered to cover the whole amount needed has taken cold feet and I'm left holding the baby. While several of his friends had contributed, New noted that if Benner paid the promised £20, there would still be a shortfall of 30, and New stated that he would cover this amount himself if necessary. Now, in late January, one of the priests who had boycotted the census, Gerald Park, was arrested for non-payment of his fine, but he was released from prison just a few hours later after the fine was mysteriously paid by an anonymous benefactor. And a number of other priests who had taken in part in the boycott released a statement saying that they believed that New had organised a fund for the payment of the fines, including by approaching other priests, and that apart from this indication of the possible source of the payment of the fines, we have reason to believe that there is a conspiracy in establishment circles to negative our protests and discredit us as priests. The priests also argued that discrimination was at play because the authorities, they argued, saw the imprisonment of boycotters such as Queen's lecturer James Daly was less embarrassing than that of the priests. And the priest's statement also emphasised that the reasons for their boycott had strengthened since the census in 71. So as they argued, since April last, injustices against Catholics have increased immeasurably. Internment, harassment of Catholic areas, torture, rearrest under the Special Powers Act of acquitted persons and people on bail. The obligation to protest against increasing injustice is greater than ever. From the beginning, we have been prepared to go to jail, and we are even more determined to identify with the sufferings of an oppressed community. So immediately prior to Park's court case, New had received a letter from another of the priests, Sean Cahill, on behalf of those involved in the boycott, in which Cahill asserted that New had been approaching church colleagues to contribute to the payment of fines. Cahill argued that, as a man of integrity, you should have approached us directly, and that we consider your attempt to use our fellow priests particularly distasteful. In his reply, New stated that he had not approached the priest to contribute to the fund, but they had spoken to him about the potential harm that could be done to the church should the priest be jailed. New also stated that he had sought the advice of a distinguished priest, and on his advice, I decided to do nothing. He also wrote that he only learned about Park's case through the newspapers and denied having anything to do with his release. Cahill's response, while accepting that New had likely not paid Park's fine, was to accuse him of engaging in semantics in his explanation that he had not approached the priest to contribute the fund. As he argued in his letter, you did not float the idea of organising payment in some way, you did float the idea of organising payment in some way, which is not substantially different from what we allege. Cahill's letter went on to state that despite our disapproval of your action in joining a unionist administration in the midst of its repression of your fellow Catholics, we maintained a charitable silence. Only when you chose to meddle in our particular response to the crucifixion of the Catholic community did we break our silence. Now, things go a bit quiet in the correspondence after that, but according to one account by McElroy, all of the priest's fines were subsequently paid anonymously on their behalf, so they all avoided prison. Although actually not by New, and it's apparently not known who paid the fines. Other figures were sentenced for non-payment, for example. So in December 1971, Mourn MP James O'Reilly was fined by a court in Kilkeel, and after refusing to pay, he was sentenced to a month in prison. So just to say something very briefly about the kind of impact of this boycott in 71. So as Compton notes, although it's generally thought that enumeration was satisfactory, one cannot be categorical about this since no post-census validation survey was undertaken, and so some degree of non-enumeration cannot be ruled out. However, there was a significant rate of non-response to the religion question. So whereas that was 1.9% in 1961, so 1.9% didn't answer the religion question, in 1971, that jumped to 9.4%. So a significant jump, presumably as a result of the publicity around these boycotts. So then on to 1981, on which I'll be a bit briefer, hopefully. So in comparison with the 71 boycott, which evolved from the priest's initial refusal to return their forms, the boycott of the 81 census seems to have been more organised, orchestrated by Republicans. And crucially, as I mentioned earlier, it took place against the backdrop of the second Republican hunger strike at the Maze or Long Cache. Indeed, it's in the 5th of March confidential weekly bulletin from the prison that one of the first references to the boycott can be found. Commenting on developments outside the prison, the report notes that on the 1st of March, which was the first day of the hunger strike, a march took place in West Belfast in support of the striking prisoners, at which Jim Gibney of Sinn Féin and the National H Block Armagh Committee called on attendees to boycott the census again. Reporting on the march, Amphoblacht relayed that Gibney had called on people to take their census forms to public locations on the day that they were due to be collected and to destroy them. The committee, this is the H Block Committee, also produced leaflets calling on people to publicly burn their census forms, as we see here. And so this is where the title of the talk comes from, No Status, No Census. In support of the hunger strikers. And so they also organised further meetings calling on people to do the same and noting in circulars that local action groups would encourage census form burning. The Lurgonen and Craigavon Hunger Strike Action Committee, for example, was reported to be distributing leaflets calling for the public burning of census forms and organising a march to a census burning demonstration. Consideration, and I discovered this in the archives at the Lindenhall Library, consideration was also given to the National Committee to boycotting the Irish census as well. But it was decided that there would not be sufficient public support for this to be useful, and so efforts were concentrated on the Northern census boycott instead. So as in 71, the reasons why Republicans called for a boycott were mixed. So leaflets such as this one, produced as part of the campaign, made reference to the potential use of census information by the government and army, suggesting privacy concerns in the context of the security situation. But they also made clear that boycotting the census was a way to pressure the government into granting Republican prisoners political status. So Fermanagh Irish Independence Party councillor Patrick McCaffrey argued that authorities will make great play of the so-called confidential nature of the census, but in a British government-controlled census, confidentiality is not guaranteed. And he was reported as claiming, in the words of the Irish News, that details from the census forms would be made available to the British Army computer at Lisbon. Quite like to see the computer. McCaffrey stated that the Army and the RUC were a rule unto themselves with information on the census forms open to government inspection. But it was not just about privacy, as I say. So he also urged, boycott the census because the British have no right to any part of Ireland and because young men are on hunger strike in Lonkesh. Speakers at an event in West Belfast, meanwhile, emphasised that the combination of burning of census forms and the Fermanagh and South Tyrone by-election in which Bobby Sands was standing would demonstrate the strength of public feeling about the hunger strike. Another commonality with the 71 boycott was the nature of the official response to this campaign, with census officials issuing reassurances via the media, focusing on largely on concerns about confidentiality of the data and stressing its value for planning purposes. So Eric Boston, the Registrar General, was quoted on the front page of the Belfast Telegraph and the Irish News as saying that, I can assure everyone that all possible steps have been taken to guard the confidentiality of such information. And these reassurances seem to have been targeted not only in response to these kind of boycott calls, but also in response to unionist concerns that census forms might fall into the hands of terrorists and that members of the armed forces were potentially putting themselves at risk should information be leaked. East Belfast MP, Peter Robinson, for example, argued that no matter the strength of assurances from authorities, there would still be lingering doubt in the minds of many people that a terrorist or terrorist sympathiser could at some stage of the census be in a position to take information from census forms. And Robinson explained that members of the security forces, including the police and the UDR, had expressed concerns at their responses to questions about occupation and, crucially, the time at which they left work, could fall into the hands of terrorists. In response to these fears, Boston highlighted that anyone could request an envelope from an enumerator and return their form by post, or alternatively hand deliver it to the census office. And these kind of messages were echoed by other voices, including the Belfast Telegraph, which argued that while Sinn Féin would call for a boycott for political purposes, everyone else who has an interest in better facilities and services based on real figures should take time to fill in the census forms fully. Neither was nationalist opinion fully united in support of the boycott. So, for example, while the Irish News carried prominent notices announcing public protests against the census, A 3rd of April editorial column highlighted the value of the data collected on religion to the Fair Employment Agency, which had been established by the Fair Employment Act in 1976 to eliminate discrimination and promote equality of employment, of opportunity employment, and for the planning of Catholic education. And the column ended, "It's one thing to talk about discrimination, it's another thing to prove it. The Catholic population can aid the work of justice by filling in the answer to question number 10, which is the question on, was the question on religion. But nonetheless, census forms were reported as being burned on the weekend of 5th of April. And here's an image from the Falls Road of census burning protest rally. So census forms were reported as being burned on 5th of April, the weekend of 5th of April, in towns and cities across Northern Ireland. Marches from several locations in Belfast converged to burn census forms in Conway Street, and in Derry, marches from the Cregan and Bogside areas met in Guildhall Square, where they set fire to census forms. The Irish News reported that 300 to 400 people took part in the Guildhall Square rally in Derry, where a local H Block Armagh committee member addressing the crowd said that the burning of census forms sent a message to Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher that she has no right to interfere in our affairs and that we don't like her economic policies, which have made the six counties the most socially deprived area in the United Kingdom, and also that because the census form does not ask us whether we speak Irish, it insults our culture, and it appears that the Irish language is unconstitutional. A member of the committee in Belfast claimed that the rally there attracted several thousand people, and elsewhere it's reported at 3,000 to 5,000. The newsletter reported that protesters also burned effigies of Thatcher. 500 people were estimated to have attended a census burning protest in Downpatrick, and organisers in Toombridge, where census forms and a union flag were burned, claimed that 4,000 people were in attendance. 300 people were reported to have taken part in a demonstration in Crossmaglen. Census forms were also reported to have been burned in Ballygawley, Dungannon, Dungiven, Coal Island, and at many smaller demonstrations. A Sinn Féin spokesman claimed that thousands of forms had been destroyed and many others had been refused when enumerators had tried to deliver them. In the days following the enumeration date, the campaign against the census escalated further. So on the 7th of April, the Belfast Telegraph reported on this, on its front page, a terror bid to wreck the census after enumerators collecting census forms were robbed at gunpoint in Derry and Omagh, and by masked men in Cookstown. The police reported that there had been 8 separate robberies of census forms in Cregan alone, with nearly 350 forms taken. On the same day that these incidents were reported, however, a further development that took place that came to dominate the subsequent coverage of the census, which was the murder of Joanne Mathers, an enumerator collecting census forms. And it's interesting that during this project, while I was conducting interviews with people involved in conducting the census much more recently, the subject of the murder of Joanne Mathers frequently came up in the interview. So I think this has sort of left a real impression on people at NISRA in particular. So Mathers was 29 years old and had a young son and was working as a census enumerator to supplement the family's income. And while she was standing at the door of a house in Anderson Crescent on Derry's Govnerscale estate, a masked gunman approached her from behind, grabbed her clipboard and shot her. According to an occupant of the house, Mathers ran inside, followed by the gunman, who then grabbed census forms that she had been carrying and fled the scene. Mathers died on the way to hospital. Her murder was widely condemned, including by all parties on the City Council. Many public figures commented that even in the context of the high level of violence being experienced in 81, the murder of a young mother collecting census forms was particularly shocking. Councillor Fergus McAteer of the Irish Independence Party was quoted as saying that even during this period of unparalleled violence, this shooting may stand out as the most callous in Northern Ireland in a long time. West Belfast MP Jerry Fitt, meanwhile, described it as one of the most savage and mindless killings, even by Northern Ireland standards of violence, for a long time. The Minister of State at the Northern Ireland office, Michael Allison, stated that the killers had sunk to a new and unthinkable depth of brutality. And the Secretary of State, speaking in Parliament, said that anyone who breaks the law, whether by destroying census forms or murdering a census enumerator, as happened in Derry, Londonderry, 2 days ago, will be pursued with the utmost rigour by the RUC. So it's an attempt to link the kind of broader protests and the murder going on there, which is interesting. So HBOC campaigners and Sinn Féin argued that the murder of Mathers was an attempt to discredit Sands and the census boycott campaign, with Sinn Féin President Rory O'Brody claiming that the murder was part of a smear campaign by the RUC. O'Brody argued that the murder was designed to counteract the growing support for Bobby Sands and to facilitate the election of Harry West in the by-election that was due to take place two days after the murder. Moreover, he argued that Fitt, who was vocal in his opposition to the hunger strike, was also attempting to pin the blame on Republicans in a piece of political opportunism aimed at undermining Sands. The IRA, meanwhile, released a statement that they believe this attack is not unconnected with the present by-election and that it is a frantic attempt to discredit the election campaign of hunger striker Bobby Sands. Both the IRA and the INLA denied responsibility for the killing, but the RUC announced that it had evidence that the gun had previously been used in 2 IRA punishment shootings in Derry. A National HBOC committee statement noted the haste with which the RUC claimed that ballistic tests had shown that the weapon had previously been used in punishment shootings, and expressed deep suspicion at the deliberate attempt by the RUC to use the tragedy to influence the electorate in the by-election. And so while no one has been prosecuted for the murder, the IRA are now widely believed to have been responsible. But it's notable how the census, so the murder and the census kind of got caught up in the political response to Sands' victory in the by-election as well. So when Sands defeated Harry West in the Fermanagh and Saith Tyrone by-election, West fellow UUP member and Armagh MP Harold McCusker was reported as saying that the result, I quote, was equal to more than 30,000 decent Catholics standing at the graveside of Mrs. Joanne Mathers and giving 3 cheers for her murder. Some immediate consequences of the murder as well. So enumerators were given the choice whether they wanted to continue working, and many in Derry decided to stop. Nonetheless, the Census Office reported that 93% of census forms had been successfully collected. In the aftermath, so after completion of enumeration, it was estimated that some 65,000 households had failed to return their forms, but after follow-up from the authorities, this was drastically reduced to under 6,000 by May 82, making for an under enumeration of only 1.4%. This estimate was used to upwardly adjust the size of the recorded population, but on publication, a number of district councils argued that their populations were still underestimated. And then there was a long process of upwardly and downwardly adjusting the process, which I won't go into. Under enumeration was finally put at 3%, and furthermore, there was an 18.5, so double what it was in 71, non-statement rate in response to the religion question. Replying in May 83 to a question from Unionist MP William Ross about how many people had been prosecuted for non-compliance, John Paton, a minister in the Northern Ireland office, responded in Parliament that only 1,006 of the nearly 6,000 missing returns were due to refusal, and that until the follow-up was completed, it was not possible to identify those who genuinely intended to make returns and those who did not. Prosecution of those who did not is now time barred, so I don't think anyone was prosecuted in 81. Now, referring back to the distinction I made at the start, One way to understand the apparent success of the 81 campaign, and I'm not judging success by the number of people who didn't return their forms, but by the fact that 18.5% of people didn't respond to the religion question. So referring back to that distinction I made at the start, I think it's sort of important to see that while the official response to the boycott calls was essentially to address one of the reasons for the boycott, which was around the confidentiality of the data collection. So there's lots of reassurance about that, but actually the reasons for people boycotting the census, or at least not answering the religion question, was not just about confidentiality of the data. It was also because the census was a symbolic exercise being conducted by the state in the context of the hunger strike and general opposition towards government policy. It was as much about that as it ever was about the census itself. Okay, so the sort of impact of these results continued to be felt over the course of the 1980s. So, for example, I just discovered on Friday, looking at some papers that have just been released at Prony, that the Deputy Chief Medical Officer for Northern Ireland, William Thornton, wrote in August 1989 that almost every week in the course of our work we are reminded of the problem of non-enumeration in the 81 census. Much has been done to try to make good the gaps in our knowledge, but many still remain. These deficiencies are nowhere more apparent than in the areas where social deprivation is most marked and towards which resources should be skewed in the planning of health and social services. As Anderson and Shuttleworth have documented, the issue of non-response in 81 also complicated interpretation of the 91 census results, with the result that much of the media coverage of the growth of the Catholic population in 91 was somewhat misleading as a result. Okay, so that's sort of the immediate consequences, and then just towards the end of the paper I reflect on some of the longer term consequences. So there was actually a discussion amongst officials after 81 whether the question on religion should actually be dropped entirely, because it was decided that 18.5% of people not answering that question meant that the data was just useless. And so there was question whether it should either be made compulsory to answer the religion question, or whether the question should be dropped altogether. Eventually, neither of those things happened, in partly because it was pointed out that the question was required for equalities monitoring purposes. But what we actually see there is the kind of start of the process by which the supplementary question about religious background gets added to the census in, I can't remember if that was in 1991 or 2001, for people who don't answer the main religion question. And we also saw, through after 81, discussion about the development of an imputation process for people who don't answer the questions, which eventually subsequently has been used for people who don't answer the community background question, somewhat controversially. The legacy of the 71 and 81 boycotts was also evident in official discussions about the introduction of an Irish language question in the 91 census. So this was suggested in January 1986 by the Irish government at the Anglo-Irish Intergovernmental Conference. So officials in Belfast were concerned really by a kind of double threat of a potential boycott in 91. So they were concerned that nationalists might boycott the census again should the question not be included, but that if they did include the question, then unionists might boycott the census. So they saw themselves as kind of caught between these two potential boycott threats. Ultimately, it was decided to include the question, and no boycott ensued. Indeed, the addition of an Irish language question in 91 might have actually played a role in encouraging participation in the census amongst Catholics. So Sinn Féin leader Gerry Adams specifically called on people to answer the new question and not to underestimate their ability to speak the language, arguing that funding would be linked to the results. And some have pointed out that Sinn Féin's kind of broader position towards the census reversed between 81 and 91 as they started to pursue electoral politics and became interested in a more accurate record of the growing Catholic population. And the Republican leadership therefore urged Catholics to cooperate with the census. Calls to cooperate also came from within broader nationalism. So the SDLP leader, John Hume, urged maximum response, arguing that if we are underrepresented in the census, we'll be underrepresented in budget allocations. Hume acknowledged political and privacy concerns about previous censuses, presumably thinking about 71 and 81, but stated that I hope that in the present circumstances, people will find those reservations to be allayed. Although I can't help but think that the fact that the fine for non-completion of the census being increased from £10 in 1981 to £400 in 1991 might also have dissuaded some people who might otherwise have been tempted to boycott the census again in 1991. So that's where the account ends.
Thank you very much, Lawrence.
Thank you.